Hey, it's Dr. Lisa, and it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. Hey, you guys, I give a shit. Yeah, you, I really care about you. You know, you guys should call in sometimes, because I would give you some direct giving a shit. You know, I'm going to tell you the call number, 718-928-9732. So anyway, I'm Dr. Lisa. I'm coming to you from Radio Free Brooklyn in Bushwick, and we're the best radio station in the Western Hemisphere. Although I used to say that all the time, and it's getting a little creepy. I'm going to have to come up with a new theme line for the show. But it is a really great station. And I was actually thinking about it this morning on the way over here. Well, morning for me, maybe mid-afternoon for you. I was thinking about, it's been almost 2 years. Do you know it's 2 years since the station was founded in May 2000 and, 15? And I was thinking about, you know, it's really funny. What triggered it was I got a phone call that I thought was from, I have a part-time job now, so I thought it was, but it wasn't. But anyway, so I have this kind of like very junior part-time job that I would have had as a 23-year-old. You know, I'm 60 now, so it should be really easy. And it kind of is. There's skills to it, but it's still pretty easy. But yet, after all my years in advertising, I still worry that they're going to fire me. And I realize how traumatized this is. And I actually got some healing yesterday. A big shout out to the Radio Free Brooklyn founders. Tom Tenney, who actually enacted the healing directly yesterday, and also Rob Pritchard, because the two of them have really tolerated me. We're actually meeting with some of the new people. We're going to have some amazing, amazing new shows this coming season. And we were meeting with some of the people that it was just really exciting to see the level of talent that are enthusiastic and excited about working with us, that I know we're going to be meeting and hanging out with and stuff like that. But anyway, so one of the people said, well, I'm a little, you know, nervous about learning the studio and I, you know, how to do all the tech. And I said, well, if I can learn it, anyone can learn it. And then Tom laughed really loudly and said, yeah, Lisa took a year and a half to do it. So I just want to say that, I realized that I was able to add enough value that people accepted and people understood that that I was doing the best I could and had enough faith in me to soldier on. So I thought about that, and I'm going to try and hang on to that thought and process that. But I know, you know, we all have flaws out there. You do. You fucking egomaniac. You definitely have a flaw. Shut the fuck up and just look inside. I'm learning how to accept mine by framing them and showing them off and dancing with them and fucking them and kissing them. That was kind of inappropriate, which it leads me to our guest today. I am one of the things about this show is that I'm super grateful for is the people I get to like talk to. And one of these people is Finley, who is here today. Hello, Finley.
Hello, Dr. Lisa.
I love her t-shirt or sweatshirt. Hoodie, really. Pussy not war. Pussy
yeah,
not war. You know what? I want to tell you something. I had a scallops in my refrigerator yesterday, leftover scallops, and I was thinking that's a much better euphemism for a vagina because it really smelled like a vagina, and the word scallops is kind of
it's more fun to say.
Well, it also has more, feels more onomatopoeic, right?
Mm, I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, so maybe we should say my scallop. I'm going to try scallops, my scallops.
Scallops, not war.
Yeah, scallops, not war. I'm going to try it. Anyway, so I had the incredible privilege of meeting Finley at the Spring Break show. You guys might have heard me talking about this in the beginning, late February, early March, when it was going on. I did a show from there with Catherine Dunn, co-host of Art Scene Radio. And I had the honor of meeting Finley because I was, as I had done, I was doing psychotherapy. I wound up doing like 100 people in 6 days. Some of the sessions were really short, but whatever. So I actually got this awesome chance to connect with Finley, even though she was showing her work next to mine, right? We were like next door neighbors, sort of.
Yeah, or I was curating
a show.
An artist friend of mine, Elizabeth Bick, and so I was manning the
It booth. Wasn't your work.
It wasn't my work.
Right, but you were the curator, right? Because the curator with all those lovely yarn and all different multimedia installations.
That
right?
was Liz Collins. I was
see,
in that area.
See how much attention I was paying.
You were working. You were working.
I was just freaking out. Yeah. I was like, oh.
I was so impressed with you.
Were you? Really? Oh, yeah. See, I've already written this thing off as, oh, Jesus. Well, anyway, enough. This could be all about me and my self-esteem, but that would be so boring. Anyway, I really did, and I'm actually really glad to have Finley here right now because I feel like I really connected. That was really a great session, and I got a lot of positive energy out of you, so it made me feel really good, and I was like, I really respect this person, or think this person is somebody that has a lot to offer the planet, which I don't always feel. I don't always focus on that. I focus on the issues, and I felt really re-energized by our positive and energized, which I can't say for all my patients, and that's not their job. I saw you coming and going. We were all really, it was a crazy week, and so I'm just really happy to have you in here right now and that we're getting to connect again. Right? We didn't really get a chance to hang out after that.
Yeah, but it was fantastic because I would sit and listen sometimes just to get away from my own booth.
Oh, really?
So I would come into your sessions.
There
was a place to lay down by the windows. And I would listen to other people and you interact. And it was fascinating, but also I can't imagine doing what you do because it's really intense. Some of the people were, you know, strong and like challenging you about things. But you really take it in and really think about it and process it in a very beautiful way. And it was really, I mean, it was an epic piece.
You know,
it was
like appreciate
it was
that.
Physical, you know. I saw you. It was exhausting at the end as well.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, you know, it's really good to get that kind of, what's the word I was going to say, validation or like just, I don't even mean it in that way. I mean,
feedback.
Just to have that reinforced that it was exhausting because I was surprised how exhausted and how long the exhaustion lasted. Until right this minute, I thought, oh, maybe it was just I'm getting old.
No, I have actually a way that I deal with that because I do big daunting projects.
You do,
as well.
Yes.
And I always take or I try not. Every time, but the best method to get fully back is to take 3 days completely away from everyone and all technology and close, you know, read a book, watch movies, and just do nothing for 3 full days.
Oh.
If possible.
Oh,
I know
that's
it's crazy,
really...
but and then you fully recharge, though.
Oh, okay, because you know what? I'm doing that next time because, honestly, I took 1 day.
Yeah,
and that
enough.
Wasn't
not even close.
That wasn't enough. And then I really just didn't want to be around people.
I
didn't want to
be. By the way, I mean,
you felt
and
the
I didn't
same
even
way.
Do you
and
know,
you weren't
a quarter of what you were doing. Now I was talking with a lot of people in the same way that you were, but I wasn't listening to their problems. I was talking about my artist, you know, trying to get the word out. But it's a lot of energy. It's a
it
lot
is.
Of exchange. It's meeting new people, establishing a relationship, and then you know, and answering the questions and being really present.
And presenting yourself.
You know, I mean, maybe 80 people per day for 5 days in a row, 7 days in a row. It's very challenging.
Yeah, yeah. See, I guess I had, you know, I did 100 people, but that's 100 people total, whereas you had like 80 people
day. I had quick interactions. You went deep with people. I mean, people were dumping.
Really? What did
stuff
you do? You remember? Like, I don't even remember this stuff.
Oh, yeah, there were some
stuff.
Really, really.
Tell me something you remember, because I don't even remember
honestly,
this shit.
Honestly, this is terrible, but there were two girls who were beyond selfish.
Like
and they
what?
Were friends. And they, like, they just didn't get what you were saying. And they kind of, what you were saying made perfect sense to me.
Uh-huh.
They were just super entitled. You know, they were halfway also. They wanted to talk to you about therapy and wanted to talk to you about real issues, but then they weren't taking it seriously. They were, like, on the fence about also making fun of this thing that was happening.
Right.
And, but they couldn't settle on where they wanted to be, and you were taking it very seriously and actually were like kind of unpacking some real things for them, and they were
uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, very uncomfortable and very unable to really hear the truth.
Yeah, that sounds like actually
there was a lot of tea happening in there, Dr. Lisa, and I don't know if everybody's ready to handle all that.
No, but it's really funny because I did get a lot of people who were people who were like getting taking like a therapy sample to see what it was like, and like I'm totally cool with however people process what they do. What I'm doing with them, or you know, I mean, I don't have I'm cool with
but
whatever.
That's so cool.
I mean, there's no other way you can do it, and really, I think. But I did find a lot of people testing me, like people who, you know, there is an aspect of fortune telling, I get that, to what I do, you know, where you could see it that way for sure. And there were a lot of people like testing me to see if they could put it over on me. And I actually got a lot of confidence because I called out people on that.
Yeah, I think you matched that really well. Like, you know, if it was a sport or a game or a tennis match, you know, you were really giving it back with all you had, and in a good way. Like, you know, it was quite effective, actually.
Thank you.
And you know, really challenging people, I think, in a good way. I mean, like I said, you're a really good listener, and you give really good feedback.
Thank you.
Whether they're willing or able to handle that is sort of neither here nor there, because you were really present.
No, I really, it was really a good growth experience for me in a lot of ways, and certainly in doing the therapy, and I appreciate it. Do you remember what we talked about? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was like really completely stressed out about the Whitney Houston Biennial, and I was convinced that I didn't have enough space. And I was looking at this, there was a perfect space right next door, but the developers would not give it to me. Like, I had tried every which way to, like, let them know how cool this project was and how brilliant it was for their empty space. And, but I ended up, you know, talking to you about, you know, challenging myself. And you actually wrote me a prescription and you said, you know, good job for challenging yourself and pushing yourself. Instead of, like, you were almost just like, wow. Like, look what you're able to handle, basically. And then you're the only person that can really challenge yourself, so push harder, basically, and like create things that kind of, you know, force you to grow and expand and get bigger.
And you were trying to decide which space to take, right?
Well, I had a space, and what happened was that I just brought all the work in there and I made it happen.
In the space that you already had, the other space.
In actual fact,
it was like a bird in the hand. Did we use that term, bird in the hand,
exactly,
too, in the bush? I think
exactly.
I remember that, right?
So I, you know, the space was 1,200 square feet, mm-hmm, and I had 167 visual artists and over 220 physical works that I fit into it.
Right, and I remember what I'm now remembering, like, what impressed me about you was your ability to manage a project that big and that expansive with so many people and so no money, I'm sure. I know,
yeah,
no money.
None.
Like the level, this is what I remember, the level of questioning that you were having with yourself. I mean, it's intimidating to me. I mean, you're really good at this and you know this, you must be. So the project management, besides a curatorial vision, which is like a given, you know, we know that you own that. But the project management, which not all artists have, it would be like, it would, it, to me, it was like having a whole Hollywood multi-million dollar budget. And the questions you were asking was, should the background have trees or flowers?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how it sounded to me. And I was like, "There's no, what is she talking about? There's no problem here.
Yeah,
she's got this. She's got this." So I really would love to spend an entire time here talking about your own work, which unfortunately, because of the Whitney Houston Biennial, is going to get short shrift. But your work is really gorgeous, and maybe we could do a studio visit sometime. I could come over and see that work in person. Because I really, unfairly, because of the way that we've interacted, I haven't. But I encourage people, because it's really gorgeous online too, to go to imfinley.com. That's very simply I-A-M-Finley, F-I-N-L-E-Y.com, and see what a great artist Finley is, and her great projects, including decorating dumpsters.
Oh, yeah, wallpaper dumpsters all over the world, yeah.
I just love that. So have you traveled a lot for that?
Yeah, and also whenever I go to a new city, I put two rolls of wallpaper in my suitcase, or I, mail it to myself where I'm going to be.
Right,
do one in every city that I go to.
Wow, do they last, or how does
last about 6 months, depending on where they are. The public go crazy for them.
They love that.
Yeah.
They love it.
Especially dump truck drivers. They get out of their vehicle, buy me coffee, want to talk to me, stop traffic. It's really fun.
Oh, man. I love how universal that is. Spreading joy all over the world. This is just one. I haven't traveled in a while, but I did go to India a while ago, and I noticed that they don't have a lot of garbage cans.
Right.
Do you find that in developing nations, that they don't have garbage?
Yeah, everybody's
Are there places without dumpsters?
Yeah. Yes, a lot. And everyone's working on a new system for this, even America. In Rome, for example, they're even considering putting underground conveyor belts, where you would just put it in a hole in the ground and you separate the holes by plastic, paper, rubbish, and that would go underground through solar energy, because the dump truck is, pretty gross for collection.
Yeah.
And then you have three or four for all the different collection points of different materials now. So there's a lot of pollution happening with just the trucks driving around.
Sure.
So everybody's working on a different system.
That's good to hear.
Maybe a developing country that doesn't have that system might come up with something even more brilliant.
So will that get rid of jobs?
Probably. I mean,
does that mean there's not going to be trash collectors?
Well, all this is like a theory right now, so nobody really knows what's going
to
happen.
But then they'll all be trained to do coding.
I kind of feel like there's all going to be all kinds of new jobs. It's like if those jobs go away, that the conveyor belt's going to break down, so there's going to be a million conveyor belt driver.
There's still a physical aspect to it, right? We need physical labor jobs
with trash,
for everyone.
With trash, there always is.
Yeah, we need that. We need that. So I want to talk to you about the Whitney Houston Biennial, which is huge. And I could describe it, but I think it would be best. You would do it better than me. You got to be able to do it better than me. So let's hear it from the creator of it.
Well, the 2017 Whitney Houston Biennial premiered in Soho this year. We had the 2014 version as well. And we waited because the Whitney waited an extra year. So we're on schedule for 2019.
So the opening's coordinated with the big Whitney
Biennial.
Whitney Museum Biennial,
that's
which
correct.
Is like an international, really.
Success.
I mean, it's national,
yeah,
American art, but it's international.
We love the
Huge.
Whitney Biennial, and it makes our show cheeky and fun.
Right.
We're the Whitney Houston Biennial, and we're this year 167 female artists that included two poetry readings, a really amazing film screening, which might come into its own biennial, a whole film festival for women directors.
Oh, cool.
And women in film. And also, we're looking for 2019 to work with journalists to mentor young journalists. And the young journalists would come in and interview or follow one artist all the way through their process of the Whitney Houston Biennial and dig a little bit deeper into their studio practice.
Oh, neat.
There's a lot of mentoring happening. There's a lot of, established women mm-hmm. in different industries that help the younger ones, mm-hmm. which is kind of the platform that's created from this show. Mm-hmm. And basically, at the end of the day, it's just this super fun, really beautiful, amazing, powerful connection between women that happens on the wall and in our interactions when mm-hmm. we all get together and make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the show, as you know, and I mean, it's a really, really impressive show. I love the way the work was in a community on its own. I mean, I loved the work. I loved the way it was hung. It's the kind of show that I really enjoy that there's not enough of.
Yeah, I mean, the trend is to have like one work on a big, huge wall and like let you really resonate with that work. And I like that too, but really, I love salon style. I feel like there's not enough salon style in the world right now.
You know what reminds me of? It reminds me of my parents. Every once in a while, they would have like kitchen sink dessert for the kids. And me and my brother, the kids. And we would just have every kind of thing you could put on ice cream. And I love that because it's just like I'm so greedy for all that stuff. And that's a great show.
It's so fun.
Yeah, because, all the work talked. I don't know. Anyway, we could go on about that, why it's so great. But a lot of other people have done that.
Yeah.
It is great. So, and also I love that you had a lot of, that you had activities every night,
a big schedule.
So it was a real festival, really, as much as anything.
To get people to have more ways in, mm-hmm. you know, like if you're mm-hmm. a dance person, you come for the dance performance, but you get all of this other stuff. And mm-hmm. same with the poets. I mean, I think it's such a nice cross-pollinization to listen to a poet read their work surrounded by hundreds of works of art. Mm-hmm. It was just an incredible experience.
So, I wanted to get the inside scoop on like what this was like for you personally. Like, how do you feel about it? How did it affect you this year?
Well, I was very stressed out.
Although you were so poised,
I was very stressed out, but I was trying to also really enjoy it. And about midway through is when I really started to have some fun. And I came in early and just took some moments with the show myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that really meant a lot to me to have a private moment in there because there's so many people working. There's so much happening, you know, and just getting the show up was like a real feat. We had 3 mm-hmm. days and there was a blizzard and all these things.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I kind of like the blizzard personally because, you know, makes everything quiet and, people stay at home, mm-hmm. which is actually kind of nice. Mm-hmm. It was one of the big days of, like, everything was already in the space mm-hmm. and we were really, like, starting to put stuff mm-hmm. up on the wall and get it moving.
And the crazy thing is this was right after the spring break show, so you went from one thing to another, right? How many days?
Actually,
was it a whole week?
I think it was only a few days, but I went to South by Southwest and made a mural and then flew back at 3 in the morning and came to the install, first day of drop-off.
Whatever you're taking, I want that.
I know, it was really crazy. It was a crazy schedule.
Wow.
So I was already, I had been working a lot before I even started that.
But you managed to get it all done, and you're good at delegating. I know you had help. I mean, I had volunteers. You didn't have money to pay people, which is always...
No, it was all volunteer. I did pay a couple of people just to make sure that I had someone with me mm-hmm. all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And also those people, you know, they needed some work, and it works out perfectly.
Yeah.
But so many people volunteered their time and really put the show together.
Yeah.
And that's such a beautiful thing when someone just comes in at the last minute, just grabs a broom, starts sweeping. You didn't even say anything. They just know intuitively, especially with women.
Yeah.
It's so fantastic. You know, my friend just started lighting, you know, at some point. She just got on a ladder and just started going for it.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, this is so great. And every time I had a question or a problem, I would just kind of shout it out to 15 or so people, and like the most brilliant answer would come to me in 2 seconds. So I can never, you know, even though I was like stressed out or tired, I was also just such a cool experience to work with such capable, able people.
Uh-huh.
And like how fantastic they were, and how together we answered every problem.
Yeah, that's so cool, because you feel like you're supported.
And that you're totally in the flow.
Yeah, you're in the flow with, it's like being in a band sort of.
Yeah,
in a
and
way,
you want for nothing. It? You know, there's just that. Yeah,
yeah, it's got nothing to do with money. It's like you can't pay by that.
Yeah.
That feeling. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like there was no money exchange. That was just pure love.
So was it all women in the show?
You know, the edges of that are a little bit blurry, and
women
identifying people, and I kind of feel like that's just the way I am. I'm not so rulesy, so
right,
you know.
But women, I mean, that was the basic.
Women or
I
like
just
people
make...
who like have an alter ego that's a woman or something right. that's you know expresses the divine feminine is cool with me too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
I just
women.
Want our listeners to understand.
Yeah, and I encourage people to apply that do have that in their hearts. You know,
right.
for the 2019
yeah.
version
I get it.
Because
yeah.
I don't want you know I'm not rigid.
Yeah, no, not at all. So I was just wondering if how you were affected, if it changed your expectations of how people view females, feminist art, any of that, or whether like what was like personally for you the things that affected you in a way, both good and bad, like things that made you really happy and surprised you, and things that weren't as and things that may be disappointing, because this isn't just all sunshine and rainbows on this show. And I just want to remind people that they're listening to Radio Free Brooklyn, and I'm here on Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit with the brilliant Finley, who we're talking about the Whitney Biennial. So what would you say to that?
I think the best and you know most beautiful thing about the show is one is the consciousness that is created that all questions are answered and that there's help and there's so many people that come together and then the beauty of the whole thing mm-hmm. actually creates a consciousness that is mm-hmm. fantastic that people feel when they walk in and they feel they can be themselves, they can have a glass of wine, they can relax as who they are because mm-hmm. they're all represented there.
So you feel really gratified by that?
Yeah.
By creating
that. And also, it's cool. It's a cool place to be. 1,000 people showed up. It was a party. It was springtime. It was heralding spring. It's like this moment where it's also, you know, you have the art world and all that stuff. But this is just something different and fun and cheeky, but also serious and powerful and poignant.
Yeah.
It's like all these things. And it's free and open to the public. It's, you know, available for everybody. That's the best part about the show.
Mm-hmm.
The worst part about the show for me, or the thing that, you know, disheartening for sure, are the sales. You know, I wanted to sell more work. I wanted to cut more checks for artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to maybe make it viable for myself or at least break mm-hmm. even somehow. Mm-hmm. And I thought the work was really good and I thought the price point was really good. And so that was disappointing. However, I learned a lot about, you know, I've gotten a lot of feedback about that. And I think that the next time I need to really walk young professional people through buying their first work of art.
Because
a lot of people really want to, but they have no clue. And I'm so in it.
Right.
It's hard for me to backtrack and back up and walk them through it.
Right, because it's hard to imagine, like, this is such, when you get it, it's hard to imagine. Yeah, I get that. I know.
So next time we're going to do a lot of focus on, you know, instead of a curator walkthrough, I'm going to say how to collect your first, how to buy your first work of art, how to become a young collector, how to mm-hmm. collect on a budget, mm-hmm. how to create relationships with artists,
mm-hmm.
how to have a good eye, how to start thinking about this process, like, at the start at the beginning.
And just to put this out there and challenge you, and I'm not, I think, you know, money is important, but like, how do you square that with making it like inclusive and just a free spirit kind of thing? Do you find that trying to
Well, I think that because I make it free for the artists to be there, and actually in the future, I'd like to even give them a $100 stipend just to show up.
Right.
So you don't have to pay to play at all for this. So mm-hmm. I think that in that way, it keeps its like street cred and fun and like mm-hmm. Vibrancy. It's also mm-hmm. young. Like, I really try to get artists that people haven't seen a lot before mm-hmm. and mix those people with some.
But you mean as far as like getting people to buy art, you feel like you're going to be putting energy into people that don't really know a lot about art.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's a good thing, right?
Well, you know, I'm trying to do the thing that I want to be, or I want to happen to me in the world. So I want to have a platform for my art. You know, mm-hmm. I want a curator to mm-hmm. come to my studio and give a shit, Dr. Mm-hmm. Lisa. I want a young collector to come to me and feel uh-huh. that they can have a good conversation with me, do a studio visit with me, go on a payment plan,
right.
support me forever
right.
if they want
right.
to.
Right, right. I see what you're saying.
You know,
okay.
So I want to
okay.
make the world
okay.
a better place
I'm buying
for
it.
Artists.
Okay, I'm buying it. Okay, I want to move on, but there was also one, oh, Jesus, well, I was really angry about something that I read when I was reading the reviews today, that somebody said in a review, it said blah, 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 something. It's difficult to know what to make of a show where... It's difficult to know what to make of a show like the Whitney Biennial where the sole determining factor for participating artists is their womanhood. There's a blah, blah, blah. There's also the feeling of a grab bag plus the nagging question of whether it ghettoizes its participants. So that made me really mad when I read that. It makes me really mad now. It sounds really condescending. Did that,
well,
or is that just me?
It was definitely something that, you know, stuck in my craw
as well. It stuck out at you too.
It hurt me.
It hurt you too.
But I don't think it's true. And so I think when, you know, someone's writing or, you know, she's entitled to do that. And what I realized about judgment and criticism for me is that if someone has something to say and it is real and it will make me better or it is constructive, uh-huh. I'll take it. But that I'm going to leave because it wasn't what was happening. It wasn't real. So
here's what makes me mad about it, because I'm one of those art people that like thinks the art world is like an art market. It's not really a world, or it's an industry. And this is such a quote-unquote art industry point of view, which undermines the whole spirit of what you're doing, certainly, and what I believe is most important about art, the connection of the artist to the work they're making and the gift it puts out into the world. And that's what art is about. And to hear this, or to read this in a sense in art criticism, made me crazy.
Well, you know, the other thing is these things happen really fast.
Yeah.
You know, the writer came one day and that thing was out the next, or maybe 2 days later.
Yeah.
So that's one thing I think is that mm-hmm. it isn't terribly carefully considered.
No, but it's fun for me to like poke back at the art world for being really snooty when I get a chance.
Yeah,
so I'm glad I got to say
really
all that.
I just really feel like it wasn't correct. Like that's not right, and it's not, certainly wasn't the spirit of the show. And you know, I don't really feel like
it didn't affect you.
The ghettoizing thing was the thing that stood out to me, because I just thought, wow. Like,
well, it's
I couldn't believe that was the word that she used. It just seemed really inappropriate to me.
Yeah, and I mean, the work, it made it sound like the work was awesome and very very high level.
And
it wasn't just great work. It was like really serious art.
Also,
artists.
I went through shows, you know, I was on Instagram. I went to art fairs.
Yeah, you
curated. I wrote down people and like I followed them for years, actually.
Oh,
watching things, you know, watching what I wanted. And there was an open call also.
Right.
But the greatest part of that show, the greater portion of that show, was work that I did select. It wasn't about somebody just being a woman.
Yeah, I know. So
it was
anyway.
That was very base.
All right, we're mad
at
them.
Very ugly.
All right, it's just annoying. Let's move. Move on. There is something that I also thought was really interesting about this show, and I wanted to ask you about. see where the connection is in your life, which I thought was really interesting, was that the theme of this show was...
greatest love of all.
The greatest love of all. But really it was about, I wrote it down here, connecting. You ask people to pick one of their... The exhibition curator requested all participants include a text on a female pioneer who means something to them, whether she's a friend, family member, or public figure. And I love that part of it. And what does that mean to you? Why is asking people to find a hero or a mentor?
Well, when I think about the show, I want it to be from, you know, older to younger and everything in between. So when I first started the show, my friend B. Kreloff, who passed away, she was 90 years of age, and the youngest artist was 24. And I thought that that was such a beautiful range, and to get this intergenerational mm-hmm. conversation going, you know, on the wall mm-hmm. and together among the women. Mm-hmm. And when I thought about the, you know, intergenerational thing, I thought, well, why can't we include Joan of Arc? Like, why can't we put Sappho in? Let's see where we all came from and who dreamed this dream and made it possible for us to dream an even bigger dream. And mm-hmm. then ask each person who's doing this to be conscious of what they're setting up for people in the future.
I love it. Love it. And it really, it actually really connected the show even more on like a whole nother level. But I find it really interesting, actually. So this show is about, you talked about a lot about mentorship programs, and this show also is about looking up to people who've come before you. So what in your life, like, did you have like a really strong mother figure, or did you have mentors?
Yeah.
Was it yes or no? It's
yes.
Either one or the
a
other.
Both my parents are really strong figures in my life. So my mom is kind and peaceful mm-hmm. and super loving. I've come from unconditional love. So that's a huge point of my life that mm-hmm. I started in this beautiful way. My dad's, you know, really intense, and we're the similar, so we butt heads a lot, but that is great mentorship. And then I always had people in my life guiding me and helping me.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up in central Missouri, a little town called Sedalia. It's mm-hmm. in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. How many, was it like you knew everybody
well,
in the town?
It's 20,000 people, but it is a pretty small town.
How big was your high school?
My class was 300, so I think it's 1,200 students total. It's
pretty,
medium.
Yeah.
It's not small, necessarily.
It's not tiny.
It's not like a couple students. But,
right. Do they have a Starbucks?
We just now have a Starbucks.
Just now, though.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have brothers or sisters?
I have an older brother. He's a scientist and lives in Philly.
Fuck. Scientist? What kind of scientist?
He's a molecular and cellular biology PhD.
Oh,
but
Jesus.
Now he's a professor. He teaches.
At where?
I'm
Philadelphia,
so
sort of.
He lives in Jenkintown.
Oh my God. My parents lived in Jenkintown. Where? They moved there after I left for college.
They tried.
They didn't give me the address. They just moved away. Jenkintown somewhere.
So funny.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Your brother. Wow. So and you don't know where he teaches. We should really find out. No, I'll get one of my producers on this away. Right away. What was your childhood? What did your parents do?
My dad's a heating and air conditioning contractor, and my mom is a social worker, and she worked for hospice and helped people die.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah.
What was that? What does she still do it?
No, she's retired. My dad's 80. My mom's 75.
Mm-hmm.
So they're.
So what was that like? Do you think, or what? How did that job affect?
She went back to school when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And became a social worker and knew right away that she couldn't handle what was happening to kids. So she focused on elderly people. And she was really comfortable with that. Like, I grew up doing Meals on Wheels.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes doing some visits with her, you know, to bring a little joy. You know,
oh,
bring
like
me
my
in
cute,
and, like...
my gorgeous daughter, yeah. My gorgeous, fun daughter.
Yeah. And just, you know, and I had a paper route when I was younger, which, of course, there's always, like, lots of elderly people getting the paper. You have to get the money from them. It takes forever. But mm-hmm. I always really enjoyed it, you know, and she kind of, you know, she's a fourth-generation Christian Scientist, so.
Oh, wow.
You know, she has a relationship. And she's just cool about death. She kind right. of just sees it as this natural thing, and helping people around the person dying is what right. she did, really, and.
It's like they call them death doulas, too,
yeah,
now.
She's like a very compassionate, non-judgmental person. She just kind of helped out when she could and did, you know.
And it was a job. It was
a job. You know, she was, like, grounding the whole thing.
Right, right. So she must, she must be a really good mother, or, like, somebody that'd be great to have around.
Yeah, she's a great mom, and she, you know, she's an avid reader. She probably reads 2 novels a week and a couple of newspapers a day. Yeah.
Wow, so she's really curious about life.
Yeah.
And so that's interesting. She was a Christian Scientist. So what did you get as a child? How do you think being around those old farts affected you?
Well, I loved it. I loved listening to their stories, and I loved being, like, a positive note. You know, that was my role, is to bring a little cheer. And I loved it. I did it. You know, I was, like, super into it.
And did you feel like you were, like, it came back to you? Like, you walked in and they were just lit up because they had, like, a lovely young...
I mean, some people are just super curmudgeonly, and there's nothing you can do, so you right. just sit with them. But right. if someone's, like, delighted by you, you know, I would ham it up and go for it.
Oh, what lovely. That's wonderful. And what about your brother?
My brother didn't really have anything to do with that. He is, like, a nerd, played Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know.
Did he want to or not?
No, it was not his thing.
It was more in your nature.
He's more of an introvert. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it was more in your nature. So, it's really great also. You seem to really appreciate the value, or maybe just... that it's not, I don't think that kind of unconditional love is, you don't take that for granted.
No way.
No way.
Well,
that's really interesting.
Well, the first thing that happened to me going out into college and, you know, seeing a lot of damaged people and how they deal with love was so disheartening to me and upsetting. And, you know, my whole 20s was that, because those people are very drawn to me because I have this love, this effervescence that, you know, and that was really challenging to deal with as a young person, because I had no clue. I mean, I was just sheltered with that.
So what would happen? Like, what kind of things?
You know,
like, troubled?
Troubled people who were very mistrustful, people who...
They gravitate. That's so interesting.
And I, you know, had a lot of energy for them because I never had those issues. You know, mm-hmm. I really came from a solid background of a lot of love. I was very wanted.
Right, right, right. So how did you feel like you needed to take care of them?
No, it just happened naturally. I'd never felt like that, but I became like a people pleaser. That was you know, if we're going to unpack that, that's always my issue.
Of course we're going to. No, so you mean because people pleaser, because...
I want to make them feel good.
Because you knew how, or because did you feel like... you were back with the old folks, making them happy, or what do you think it was?
I guess so. I mean, I think it was my role, you know. I was such a cheer giver and a cheerleader, you know. I'm very encouraging.
Were you?
I wasn't a cheerleader, but I am, like, a cheerleader in my life, which is also the way to use in a biennial, you know.
Yeah.
So many people, they, like, maybe stopped making work, and I was like, you have to do this for the show. Like, tell me your idea. Let's get it going. Like, you know, here's your platform. It's free. Let's go.
Right,
you know, and
right.
get people back on track for what they want.
So do you ever feel like that's, because you're an artist on your own, do you ever feel, like, resentful or, like...
Well, at the end, I definitely feel depleted, and I have to go back into my own studio practice and recharge my battery. And I'm a Libra, so I go, you know, very extrovert, really hard, but then I have to swing back into my introverted side.
Oh, so you know how to handle that. You got
that.
Yeah,
I have a pretty good balance now. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, tragedy on the dance floor all the way through, but right now it's working really well.
So, I mean, it's impressive. I'm hearing about your mom also. I mean, whatever. I'm just processing this. Whoa, somebody who actually had genuine unconditional love, and it also took somebody who's got whatever that emotional quality is to be a hospice worker. I mean, it's pretty interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you got you are lucky, and you know that.
And my dad's an entrepreneur. So on the other side, I have this like really hardcore like capitalist who came from nothing and made an empire, you know, in his own right, mm-hmm. out of the heating and air conditioning world.
Did he? You could do pretty well. Did he do pretty well?
Yeah, I mean, for the
you have nice home and stuff.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That.
Yeah, I mean, he helped me through mm-hmm. college. You know, we wanted for nothing.
Uh huh.
It wasn't. You know, I remember in mm-hmm. the 80s, it was really tough, but. You know, he's still working.
But you didn't get, like, did you have, like, a Swarovski-crusted prom dress or anything?
No, like not like that. I mean, we're Midwest. You know, it's a small town. Like, maybe if he was in Kansas City or St. Louis or something, maybe I would have that prom dress. But I wore a 60s dress of my mom's for prom.
Oh, I bet that was awesome.
In a pastel, like, pastel blue polyester number.
I'd like to see to see a picture of that. So are you still really close to your parents then?
Yeah, actually just visited mm-hmm. 2 days ago. I went for home for Easter.
Mm-hmm. And you don't mind if I mention that you've been in a long-term relationship, right? So you've been in a relationship with the same woman for 8 years?
Mm-hmm.
And so do you guys ever think about having kids?
Not for me. I mean, I think she kind of was open to that, but I decided that I didn't want to. And she's older, so.
And why is that?
Is
it because of your art?
Yeah, my art and financial reasons. But also, I get a lot out of, I think when I'm older and maybe have my own place, I'm mm-hmm. probably, you know, foster or I might do something like,
interesting.
I wouldn't mind having like a teen, troubled teen.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, but it's weird.
There's
like,
lots of parents that will give you their teenagers, I have no doubt.
I just have this feeling I'll probably have some kind of, I already helped someone in Rome. My girlfriend and I hosted a young guy through college for 4 years. So, you know, it's already sort of starting to happen that sometimes a stray might need something and, you know, we'll take them in, no problem.
Right.
If we can, you know, we also travel a lot. So sometimes our places are empty and, you know, we give that away and, you know, just try to help whenever we can.
Yeah. But you're busy, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not interested in early childhood education at all. Like, the idea of stopping and bringing a person all the way through, you know, the whole linguistic process, you know, the whole thing.
I have
zero interest in it. I love babies, but that whole process.
It's a shoe tying. You get stuck at the shoe tying.
Yeah, it's
right?
Just not
I
for
hear
me.
You.
I mean, I'm a patient person, but I don't think
I know. It's not. That's good
that
you.
It's not my calling. It's not my. It doesn't move me.
No, I get it. So here's a guess. I would imagine, like, I have this fantasy now that, like, you have, like, really healthy relationships. Is that true?
No, definitely not.
Okay, so help me understand.
I have all through my 30s, like, unpacking toxic relationships to the point where now I kind of feel like I hardly have any friends.
So what would that be then?
It would be me being a people pleaser, stuck in a box, and kind of like a bully type of relationship where I was always listening, always helping, always, you know, giving my good positive energy away mm-hmm. to someone who didn't really use it, take it, want it, or wanted it but didn't do anything with it.
So do you think you were trying to win over somebody?
Definitely.
And why would somebody like yourself, for God's sakes, care about winning over? Like
it definitely comes from my relationship with my brother.
Oh, interesting.
My brother never really wanted to have anything to do with me.
And
so he's 5 years older than me, and uh-huh. I always wanted his attention.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's weird. We're still not close, but I'm very, you know, I'm very, like, beloved.
Obviously.
I'm very beloved by my friends and my family.
Yeah.
But, I want his attention. I want that love.
Huh, and that's interesting because he was a male. Do you think that affected it, maybe? Did it affect your view of men at all?
I just feel like, you know, he's supposed to be my ally.
Right.
You know, I always felt like, you know, you got an older brother. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It really was not. That was a very broken relationship for me.
So did he, was he just plain ignoring you?
Ignoring slash cruel.
Cruel?
He just really you know how sometimes, because he had a car, you know, like, but he really never would do anything unless my parents forced him. Like, he never was like, all right, let's just go get an ice cream. Never.
So were your parents upset about that relationship?
I think they thought we would just grow out of it.
And now?
now, you know, he has his own family and sort of separated himself from our family. Even, you know, my mother just tries so much to be with her grandkids and all this. And it's just a complicated relationship for our whole family, actually.
Oh, okay. So he wasn't that into, wasn't just you, your whole family, the whole idea of family, or well, the whole thing.
Yeah, I think.
Do you think it was something in particular? Or?
My dad. Sorry. He and my dad. And I'm sort of similar to my dad in character.
What about your dad?
Probably overbearing and too intense for my brother. My brother's, you know, a lot more mild-mannered. And actually, he's very into his family, very into his kids, very into the simplicity. My dad's very complex. If he, like, my brother's a teacher. If my dad was a teacher, he'd be the vice chancellor. Or, you know, he would work the, like, go all the way.
He's super ambitious, your dad.
And my brother, you know, finds that to be, you know, he hates it. Like, if my dad's talking to a waiter or something, like, the way he talks to them just makes my brother cringe.
So your brother rebelled, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. Does he have a good relationship with his wife and kids? And
yeah,
it seems like a nice family.
Yeah, they have their own way of doing things, though. So
what does that mean?
The weird thing is that she is super tough and controlling. So he, like, kind of married my dad. Yeah, you know, cycles.
So he married your dad. Is she ambitious, the wife?
In her own way, I don't totally understand her, to be honest.
Does she have a job?
Yeah, she's also a teacher. They have they do the same thing.
Uh-huh. Well,
they both got PhDs together at, you know.
Where?
In Alabama. Birmingham, Alabama. She's German. She's from Bavaria. Uh-huh. They met in PhD program, got married. Now they have three kids, and they're very happy, and they do, you know, crafts, and they're really, they go around and do really fun things. They're very outdoorsy. They like to camp and hike and do all that stuff.
They just don't want to have that emotional. Yeah, it sounds like maybe your family was just a little too emotionally intense for them.
Yeah, I think we're too intense for them.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, boys are like that anyway.
Well, sometimes they go off and do their own thing, and that's just
it's probably not. It probably just didn't jive with his makeup, his nature, maybe.
Yeah.
Is there any, like, real conflict or?
No, that's the thing.
Did he ever have?
He never puts his shit on me. I have to say that he never, you know. And we've had nice interactions.
Sure.
And, like, I put love in my heart for him.
Sure.
But we just don't hang out.
So you tried to work that out.
Yeah, then I tried to be really popular with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Because you know what? I bet you're really close to being really popular with everybody.
I am.
So there's like that 1-2% person that you can't, that you got to win over, that last person.
I do love an introvert challenge, you know?
I could see that. I can imagine. But you know
what? But I'm done with, like, I have finally, you know, I see all that stuff now, and I'm getting more and more distance from it.
Right.
So that's beautiful. That makes me feel much better about, you know, aging. When I think about aging and I think about, you know, how far I've come with all of that stuff, I'm very grateful.
Right. That's kind of amusing because, you know what makes me mad personally is like, because I need to be liked too, obviously. And there's always that one person that actually does the opposite or doesn't try, or and they get people like you, the people who I really want to like me the most, they're the ones who get the attention.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I'm so over that as well.
Yeah, I think Marc Maron is like that because it's a long story. His girlfriend was supposed to be on the show, and then I said something nice to him, and then her gallery canceled the next day.
Oh, my God.
And then I called them up, and I was like, you know, you guys, I was at the opening last night, and now you give me an email canceling this morning. Like, you know, I'm taking this personally. You should have, like, waited a week.
Yeah, right.
Do you know who he is?
Talk to me, baby.
You know who he is, right?
No.
Marc Maron? Uh-huh. Oh, he's good. I'm glad. Let's not even talk about him. So we have 5 minutes. I want to remind people once again that this is Radio Free Brooklyn, and that you should donate money to us, because wasn't this great, this whole
thing?
I love
this. I want to like promote and shout out Radio Free Brooklyn from the mountaintops right now. I'm really impressed with your operation here,
Isn't
Lisa.
It great?
Fantastic.
Isn't it great? You would love it. I mean, you would love it because it's such a community here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
really brilliant. And, you know, our voices need to be heard. So,
yeah.
My gosh.
And this is the time to do it, and it's actually, we just got our nonprofit status.
Cool.
So it's
so you're really working it.
Yeah, so I want to remind people of that, and I also want to once again remind them to go to your website and look at your work, which is awesome, and you can also see those mostly great reviews with that one annoying, it's not even a bad review. It's
no,
just
it's not a bad review.
Fucking
it's like
annoying.
One long line in the middle of it that's like a real fuck you.
Yeah, and but in the worst of the art world way. But it's
she, I to her credit, I have to say her job is so hard, and she does not, those writers, they do so much work for
yeah,
so little
no.
back, you know?
Yeah. And it's not like it was on a good website, but it wasn't like on a website that's really commercial.
It's funny because a lot of people love that, like, because she showed also so much art from the show. So
yeah.
a lot of people
yeah.
got a lot of play from that article.
Sure.
And it was, like, fantastic, except for that one line. And I think everyone just, like, was like, ugh, whatever. And, like,
so
just got to the good part. Like, nobody, you know.
But did it stand out? Were people talking about it?
Nobody talked to me about it.
Huh.
No, not one person
really?
Said it. I
good.
Mean, for me, I was like, ooh. Like, when I read that part, I was like, wow, that's tough. But... you know, moved on, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Who cares? So it's imfinley.com, letter I, letter A, letter M, Finley, Finley. You should definitely check out this work. It's very kind of the colors. It's very happy, positive, smart work, like you. Like you, just like you.
Thank you, darling.
What else can I tell you? I also want to make sure that you guys just hang out here, because the show after the show... that starts at 3 is really freaking awesome.
What is it?
It's called, oh, I should know what it's called. Why did I not write? I'm blanking. I'm not going to be able to think of the name right now, because I've already made myself so neurotic about not knowing it that I just have to let that go.
It's fine.
Okay.
The cool show after this.
But it's a mixtape show. Mixtapes
oh.
Rewound or something like that.
Nice. That's so cool.
There, I sort of remembered it. And it's hosted by Alon Donzinger and Jimmy Hoffman. And Alon was like a really crazy tape. He carried around a tape recorder in the mid-90s in middle school and just made like tons of tapes. And so he has these tapes, and he invites other people to play their mixtapes, and... they're really funny guys, and they're really, really awesome. So you guys should stick around. And I also want to, like, tell you guys, you know, why don't you write me an email? Write me an email. So the best way to get in touch with me is lisa@radiofreebrooklyn.com. And, you know, write me an email. Tell me whatever you want, because I can take it. Okay.
But she also really wants to be loved, so send some love.
I want to be loved so badly. You
me,
got
me
it.
Me too, Dr. Lisa.
Well, you know, it's funny how, you know, you can get, like, I did not get unconditional love, but it's funny how the world can wind its way around where you and I are both in the same
in
place.
In the need of the same thing.
Right? And in the same room
yeah.
talking about it.
Oh, the world is so
yeah.
fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you see, your brother made up for all that.
Yeah. Oh, didn't he?
Brothers are really, siblings are underestimated, I think, in the world of
especially
psychology.
Especially when they have a CB radio with a speaker on their Bronco and pick you up at movie theaters in front of all your friends.
Really? Wow. What would they say? Get in the car. You're...
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It was like every Dungeons and Dragons player, like, letting out.